C1SP. Number 16A.
Now we came as far as that tone of principle, as mind and as spirit and soul and principle and life. I think the best thing is if I just recapitulate only that tone of principle, because it seems to be the center of the second part and such an important problem or proposition for our everyday life. It is the question, from which standpoint should we look out into the universe? Should we have a view of the universe from the standpoint of mortal mind? Or should we have a view of the universe from the standpoint of immortal mind, from the throne of grace, to sit at the right side of His Majesty, as the Bible will put it, and to look out from the throne of grace? And from that point, we have to read what we see. And to read what we can read is never a materiality and is never a material universe, but will always be, when we read from the point of mind, will always be a mental universe. Now, if we read and take the standpoint of mortal mind and read from the standpoint of mortal mind, we read a universe of human beliefs, quite naturally. We go down to the same plane or level of thought as general human beliefs, and then we read human beliefs. But if we go to the standpoint of divine mind, then we read the divine universe and the divine purpose of the principle of the universe. And so this is the fourth subject. It states first as mind, says mind reading, thought reading, of thought which is present, which is absent, which is past or present, of people who are known or anonymous, that doesn't matter. Thought can be read, just as one can read the pages of a book. It's only a matter of education. But then sets in already the first difference and classification, which says, but be aware that from one standpoint you cannot read or commune with another standpoint. That different awakenings betoken also differing states of consciousness. That a materially minded mind cannot read a spiritually minded mind. That one present and fettered by this plane of existence cannot read the universe of spiritual reality, that only we can read within the range of one's own of its own plane. Therefore, the mortal mind reader can only read on the plane of mortal mind, and there is no intercommunication, no communication with a spiritually minded consciousness. We have to see that. We have to see that. And not be disappointed that the materially minded mind cannot understand and appreciate what the spiritual consciousness means and is worthwhile and contains. Seeing this difference already, see, spirit always makes distinctions. Seeing this difference, naturally the demand of soul comes and says, then, in order to rise higher, identify yourself with the standpoint of the divine mind and not with the standpoint of mortal mind. That's your job, to be, not to think because there is mortal mind reading, it doesn't matter from which standpoint we read mortal mind. No, therefore, the demand of resurrecting ourselves to the standpoint of divine mind is necessary. Having seen that necessity, principle of soul, having seen that necessity to identify our standpoint with the divine mind, not with the human mind or mortal mind, then principle says, now what do you see from this standpoint? What will be interpreted to you from that standpoint? From the standpoint of mortal mind reading is what she calls reading touches only human beliefs, touches only human beliefs. Whereas, from the standpoint of immortal mind, we are not going to read mortal mind as such, as a purpose, I would say, primarily, as a primary interest to read mortal mind, but the aim and direction and the purpose of the immortal mind reading is what she says, to read the aim of a spiritual goal. She says it is a revelation of the divine purpose. We begin to read reality, you see, we begin to read the realm of the divine mind. The revelation of divine purpose through spiritual understanding, by which man gains the divine principle and the explication of all things. See, that's what a real immortal mind reading wants to achieve. It wants to know the whole principle and the expression, the calculus of this principle, and the purpose of this principle, the divine purpose of it. A very different direction is given to mind reading. Immortal mind reading has that direction to reach the range of fetterless mind, and to reach that range of fetterless mind, we become prophets, principle of life. The moment we have taken the right standpoint of principle, what this principle interprets is always the fullness of its principle, life. And we begin to be prophets, spiritual prophets, and not just foreshadowing evil and prophesying evil, but to read, what it says, the range of fetterless mind, to foresee and foretell events which concern the universal welfare. It doesn't see into the future, it hasn't as a purpose to see in the future all sorts of catastrophe, of predicting penalty and so on, but it is to see how the law of the divine principle unfolds and progresses in its infinite progression. It's a wonderful vision of the prophets. That's how far we have got before we stop. And now it comes to the tone of principle as truth. She says, and that's another main point in it, where she shows that if we have taken that standpoint of principle, reading a universe of fetterless mind from the standpoint of principle, that through seeing and recognizing the fullness of the divine universe, that by the law of contrast, by the law of opposition, by the law of contrast, we uncover and discern the error that needs to be destroyed. And so truth comes, we begin to see that this mind, this immortal mind reading, if it has become a divine standpoint of principle, and as it becomes a standpoint of principle which looks out into the immensity of its principle, that becomes the Christ to every situation. That by the law of contrast, or of opposites, I would say, it discerns those errors which need to be wiped out. So mind reading here becomes the Christ to the situation. Immortal mind reading, I mean with it, immortal mind reading becomes the Christ to the situation. And in this tone of principle as truth, we get those paragraphs which Mr. Dawley always pointed out as to be very essential in the treatment, namely that through this spiritual mind reading, we discern the error that needs to be destroyed. The way she builds up again that subtone of principle as truth, I can't help but going through it through again seven subtones, because it is so clear the method she shows here how to deal in a situation. See, that's a very practical part, this principle as truth, because every one of us, when faced with a situation, especially with somebody else who we hardly know, with a situation which has come about where we don't see the mental cause on its first glance, we have to see through the situation and find out which error, which specific error needs to be destroyed. But how to find it out? How to find it out? The method of it. That's what she points out here. She gives a definite method, and as we have seen last time, it is the same method as Mr. Dorley used in his practice, and which he showed in his book on Christian Science Practice, the same ordered method, without that he knew about this specific layout of this passage here. But it shows only that if spiritual sense is pure, that the divine principle always reveals itself in the same order. It reveals itself in the same order, no matter if it has been the prophets or Jesus or Mrs. Eddy or Mr. Dorley or us. That science is ordered, and because science is ordered, it reveals its fundamental structure always in the same way. And here we have seen the method. It is that which Mr. Dorley would say in his terms, that he would say, well, here you have a proposition which you have to tackle. The first thing you do, you put the whole thing behind you. It's a picture of mortal mind, so put it behind you, because we are not immortal mind readers, we are divine mind readers. As we are divine mind readers, we look into the range of infinite, fetterless mind. And so here the first tone of mind is showing that we first are beholding and the true concept of the science of mind, the true concept of mind, mind's idea, and we begin first to see the discern man's true nature, the true nature of man. We are not looking at the proposition, at the case, at the argument, at the picture of the sickness or anything. That's behind us. And first we go to mind. We always start in mind. Say, what does mind tell me? And mind tells me always the true picture of man as idea. And then she shows a second point, that is not enough to see just look into the infinite range of mind, but then that we have to ponder it, to thoroughly learn it and properly digest it. You see now the pondering of it, the giving birth of it. So let's be aware that it's not enough always to stop with mind, to say what is true and what is not true and leave it at there. Let's ponder it and digest it and take it in and have it warm. And that's what she says here. That's the second. That's the calculus. That's where Mr. Dorley would say, then I begin to ponder what this infinite picture of man is, that man is the idea of mind. What does it mean? Man is the idea of spirit. What does that mean? Man is the idea of soul. What does it mean? He fills his thought. You see, he has the whole calculus of spirit is flowing into one's consciousness. Then she goes on to the third and says, then in the measure as this mortal mind picture yields to that contemplation of the divine mind picture, of that beholding and seeing the picture of the divine mind, the mortal mind yields, and what happens is that the capacity of soul is speaking to us in a definite way. She speaks here about this illumination of spiritual sense, which demonstrates the capacity of soul. It's that point where something definite of the infinite capacity, where we see that every problem has its solution within the infinite capacity of soul, that not one phase of error has not its counterfeit, has not its counterfact in the capacity of soul, that soul sense can detect every situation. But how can it do it? Just through this pondering and pondering something in us, Mr. Dolly would say that through pondering that whole picture, that whole calculus of spirit, that then something definite would begin to talk in his consciousness, in his spiritual sense, that something would reveal itself and become definite in his spiritual sense, and that he would cling to that definite sense. And as he would cling to that definite sense, then happens what she says here afterwards, that then principle takes over and reveals what constitutes, she says, the harmony and the error which needs to be destroyed. It enables us to discern the error you would destroy. That then principle does it. You see, then principle has done it. Then it is no more our guessing that has done it. No more our guessing what could have been the mental cause of a situation. To what cause shall we attribute this harmonious situation? In that way we begin to, it is principle that talks to us. You see, then it's mind reading. Then it's immortal mind reading. Then she goes on and says, but shall I do that every time with every problem? She says, yes. Says Jesus used that method, the prophets, the Hebrew prophets used that method, we all have to use that method. Just as Mr. Dolly said, well, every time I have that situation, what do I do? And he began the whole story again, see, because it is the attuning, it's nothing else than a method of attuning our consciousness to the divine, to the immortal mind consciousness. To the standpoint of immortal mind, where the immortal mind begins to talk to us and becomes definite in soul and names the error which needs to be destroyed. And that's the eternal law, that's the eternal rhythm, that's the method of life. And then she goes on and shows that that error which was discerned through this method, that has to be rebuked. And she speaks there about error in a very general way, you see. And I think that's very necessary to see. She speaks there about the sharp thrusts at materiality. Jesus knew that the whole generation was wicked, not only one mortal, that the whole mortal generation is wicked. It was a sharp thrust at materiality, that it was... that he didn't spare any stern condemnation for hypocrisy. See, he tackled error as such in a general way and not in a personal way. And that's what truth always does. That truth always sees the nothingness of its counterfeit in a general way and not just in one person or in one patient. Just as in the first part Mrs. Eddy has shown that we must arrive to the understanding that no one must die. Not only that no one, that somebody need not to die. And so the more general we take it, the more broader the facts become. And finally she says, and in this way truth communicates itself and never imparts error. And so it communicates just the true facts and the complete facts. It's a wonderful method of how to analyze a situation and to uncover the error we would destroy. And actually the whole chapter on the Christian Science practice is built on the preceding chapter and is built on the knowledge of this method. And goes out from that standpoint. Then she goes further to the last subtone of principle as love on the last on the further page 86. Now, what is this? See, first I recapitulate. We make another rehearsal. Of that very practical standpoint of immortal mind reading, that immortal mind reading has something dignified about it, because we know the beginner of Christian Science knows already He has heard about it, that every material manifestation has some mental cause. And the beginner of Christian Science knows somehow that if he has to deal with a material disharmony, that he has to find a mental cause. That he knows. But the experience shows that perhaps in 90% or 95% or 99%, it's guessing. We just can watch perhaps for the next 2 or 3 months once how much is guessed about such a situation. You hear about the situation and then the next thing is you try to find a mental cause for it. But it's usually guessing. One has a patient, or perhaps one even knows that patient, and he has this and that disease, and the first thing one says, well, that is this and this cause because one knows something about the life of that person. But that's guessing. That's not more immortal mind reading. It's in most cases most brutal because one just stamps on that poor patient another sin that makes him even a greater sinner and says, well, there you failed and there you failed and there you failed. But the real mental cause, the actual or the factual mental cause may be something very different. And this very different, but the factual mental cause we can only detect through spiritual sense. And I quite agree that a capacity like Jesus or Mrs. Eddy may have been in a constant state of spiritual sense which was able to detect at once that cause. But if one hasn't grown yet to that status, well, for those people, for us, these first four chapters are presented. They show us how to grow naturally and spiritually in more and more into that state of spiritual sense. And so from the Christian Science Practice book of Mr. Dory, you can see how he too, whenever he had to face a situation, how often he told us how he would go over that day in and day out, many days until through the tone of principle as truth, until spiritual sense was clear enough to receive the message of the divine message, to discern the error one would destroy, and that's naturally the plan, the divine plan, the divine purpose of reading, of immortal mind reading. And that's something very different than guessing always a mental cause. It's so easy to have a patient who has some difficulties and to point out to him somewhere where he goes wrong. We go wrong on so many points in our life and in our thinking, and then to take just one out of them and pin it down and say that's the cause of it is a bit brutal and not scientific. And I feel we would do a lot of good if we would see this ordered structure, this ordered method of reading from the standpoint of immortal mind, the errors of the human mind. You see, and the purpose of it, I come to principle as love, and the purpose of it is always to heal and to save. That last subtone in love shows that the purpose of divine mind reading is to be susceptible to the human need in order that we can save the human mind from mortal mind. It's always to heal and to save. It's always to lift up. It's always to be susceptible so that this immortal mind reading is a blessing and not a curse, and not to make a sinner feel to be even a bigger sinner, and to make a patient feel that he is even worse than what he is, and even more wretched than what he thinks already he is. It is to lift him up out and to heal and to save. That's the purpose of mind reading, of immortal mind reading. So here, that's the end of this fourth subject of immortal mind reading. Now, what are the conclusions of it? I want to go over it again insofar as to see what are the conclusions of mind reading. What is the purpose, the aim of divine mind reading? Well, the aim of divine mind reading is always positive and saving, whereas the mortal mind reading is always making more out of the human and trying to make the human more real and more disastrous than it already is. And so our demand is to see that we are not dropping our standard. The conclusion, therefore, is first that we can read mortal mind, that we can read the errors that needs to be destroyed. That's the first thing, the possibility that we can. But that it shows that it's only possible within the realm of its own state of consciousness. Then comes a crucial point. Then we must decide, are we going to read the mortal mind ad libitum? Do we want to read mortal mind ad libitum or not? Do you know what ad libitum is? Ad libitum or not? Are we going to sniff into the privacy of every man and woman? Or are we going to use the method of immortal mind reading in that dignified way there where we are asked to help, where we are asked to save, where it is a divine purpose in it to heal and to save, and to leave the rest of mortal mind alone in other people? Then, if we see that it is only for that purpose, then we go and take the standpoint of immortal mind, and not of guessing, and so start with the vastness and the richness of the fetalist, of the realm of the fetalist mind, and to fill our thoughts with this vastness. Then, from that vastness on, from that completeness on, from that fullness on, that is the Christ, that always by the law of opposite and of contrast discovers, detects the error that needs to be put right. So we see and we put right, and then in love it shows that the more we are susceptible for the call of mortal mind for help, the better we can help and direct those mind and free the human mind of mortal mind. And then this immortal mind reading has a divine purpose. So it shows, I repeat that again, so it shows that reading the mind truly and divinely is always via God, and never a guessing. The only divine mind reading and immortal mind reading is only that which first goes to God. And only when it first goes to God, and then first fills consciousness with the true sense of God and man, that only from that standpoint let error be uncovered and set aright, and not just guessing a mental cause. Well, that's the tone of principle. And then it comes to the fifth sub. Do you know where we are in the structure? We have taken now in the second part, first the tone of mind, which said, our basis must be mind, and the voice of mind, the uttering of mind, the beholding of the mind, and not the utterings of human opinions. Then the second subject was to see that if we take the basis as our basis mind, that basis begins to govern body and brain, that it invigorates and strengthens, and that mind is the only substance which never wearies out. Whereas spiritualism, which is building on human opinion and human hypotheses, on the human will and the volition of human will, that they believe in the cooperation of mind and matter. And the third subject showed that the proof of our immortality lies in the proof of God, in the immortality of God, and that there is no proof of the immortality of man through sense evidence, that every sense evidence can be destroyed by the science of mind, but that the true proof of the immortality of man lies in the immortality of God. And then fourth, we had that standpoint of immortal mind reading versus the standpoint of mortal mind reading.